Marini's Media.
Hand-wringing at Charlton, hand-washing everywhere else. Forest's owner got corona. Let's hope it doesn't put the kibosh on the rest of the season. Elsewhere, there's more financial woes for Southend and Macclesfield, but it's not all bad news as we hear from Wigan goal-getter Kiefer Moore on his incredible football journey. Always played behind closed doors, it's a soundproofing thing. This is the Totally Football League Show. Hello again, listener, and welcome to our EFL Haven. I'm Matt Davis-Adams, and with me today in the studio are two pundits of the very highest calibre available on a Wednesday morning. First up, if you listen to Monday's Totally Football show, you'll have heard me talking about James Milner's loan spell at Swindon back in the day. Turns out one of our panellists played with him down at the County Ground. In fact, let's take a trip down memory lane. It's September the 27th, 2003. Swindon have just beaten Peterborough 2-0 at the County Ground. Milner iced the cake in stoppage time with the second goal after the scoring had been opened on 84 minutes by the one and only Sam Parkin.
Going to whip one in. It's Parkin. 84 minutes gone. And the deadlock's been broken. Sam Parkin for Swindon gets his eighth goal of the season with a courageous header there.
Milner celebrated with a J2O that night. How about you, Sam? Capri Sun and Bongo? Is he the only England international you've ever shared a score sheet slash dressing room with?
In a first team, I believe he is.
But yeah, because your youth career is littered with...
Youth career, yeah. I remember Joe Cole coming to Chelsea for a period. Obviously, John Terry, Crouchy for district and borough teams and the like. Colton Cole as well, I thought of as well. So, yeah, a lot. But James Milner, 17 years old, I think he was. He'd already scored in the Premier League at that point. And he is, as you see him now, really... the consummate professional. I think we probably tried to take him out to various watering holes in Wiltshire and he declined, and I think he used to spend the majority of his time at his local cricket club. So not much has changed,
you
I think.
You said you did get him out once and he had a J2O. Was that because he wasn't of legal age to drink or just because he didn't want to?
A bit of both, probably. Right. I think he might have come to Cheltenham one year with us. My memory's a little bit fuzzy, but no, I just remember him being a brilliant professional. He played so many different positions even at that age. And Andy King, our manager, had a really good friendship with Peter Reid, so that was the link, getting him. And Kingy had a knack of getting brilliant young players, and Milner was clearly one of the best.
Well, alongside Sam, a former New Zealand rugby union player and politician, he represented the All Blacks from 1958 to 1960 and unsuccessfully stood for the National Party in the Henderson electorate at the 1969 general election. He was also the owner of a commercial crayfish boat. Welcome aboard, Adrian Clark.
Good day.
Good day indeed. You'd have been awash with international teammates at Arsenal. Off the top of your head, who do you think you played with who's got the most caps?
Oh, the most caps. Good question.
Happy says Thierry Henry. That's got.
I didn't play with Thierry Henry. Yeah, I played against Thierry Henry.
David Platt,
Bergkamp, David Platt. Tony Adams had a fair few, didn't he? They all had stack loads, really, didn't they? Yeah, very very lucky.
Joe Crilly is at Cheltenham. He'll be taking the Alan Brazil fitness test later. If he passes it, he'll join us via the telephone. Now, obviously, there's a black cloud hanging over sport and society at the moment in the form of the coronavirus. Many places on the continent are playing games behind closed doors for the foreseeable. Time of recording, that's not the case in England. The EFL's most recent statement on the matter says...
The EFL continues to remain in regular dialogue with the government regarding the ongoing developments and is being appraised on a regular basis of developments that could potentially impact our clubs and competitions.
Well, the impact on English football increased on Monday when Forest owner Evangelos Marinakis announced he's contracted coronavirus and met the team on Friday before the game against Millwall. He also met some of the Arsenal squad before their game with Olympiakos. That's caused the Gunners' game with Manchester City to be postponed. Olympiakos have released a statement on Wednesday morning saying their players have all tested negative for the virus. Bruno Leite, among others, asking us on Twitter at The Totally Show, what will be the impact of playing behind closed doors for the EFL clubs? What percentage will not survive the hit on its finances? Clarkie, Gary Neville pointing out on Twitter yesterday, as, of course, a part owner of an EFL club, he's not keen on playing behind closed doors. You'd rather see the season postponed for a bit too, if possible.
I would, yeah. Now, I'm completely with Gary Neville on this one. Obviously, the Euros are in doubt at the moment. I think they have to be, considering it's a continent-wide event. And that could potentially be postponed until 2021, I would imagine, which would leave a window open, wouldn't it, in late May, into June, July, if we have to, I suppose, for for the season to finish. I would personally would prefer matches to be postponed now rather than play behind closed doors. It would financially cripple most clubs, I would imagine, at League One and League Two level. They rely, don't they, so heavily on admission, you know, prices and ticket money to survive. And as we know already, a lot of clubs are struggling even with, you know, healthy gates. So absolutely, it would have to be a last resort. I'd rather postpone than play behind closed doors. And look, what is football without the fans? I just hate watching football with an empty stadium. I think it's more important to wait and get the fans back in.
Yeah, Sam, it's one thing doing it for a Champions League game when the club's money for that comes from the competition rather than from the gate revenues. But for League One and League Two sides, it's not going to work, is it?
Yeah, it'd be a big problem. And yeah, the other side of it, always think of a phrase we used to say in science at the end of a lesson. Was it a fair test? Teams that have had the home advantage against other sides, the fixture list, obviously it's the same, but the counter argument would be it's the same for every team, but it's not, considering, you know, that some of the fixtures will be easier, and obviously with the backing of a big home support as well, it makes a huge difference for the clubs across the level. So for that reason, and the ones that agents explained, I think it's going to have to stop, isn't it, at some stage, and maybe just push the season back if that's possible.
If obviously postponements will in the short term really damage clubs financially as well, but at least they would have the guarantee of that game going ahead where they can generate the revenue. So yeah, that's where I sit on this one.
Anyway, to the football, which still will happen this weekend, brackets at the time of recording, close brackets. Abby, please type Championship into the sat-nav.
You're listening to the Totally Football League Show in association with William Hill.
Championship headlines. Addicts at it again as ownership row triggers crack badge motifs galore. On the pitch, Charlton's lost to Burr at the weekend sees the three promoted sides occupy the relegation spots. Forest, meanwhile, let in a 13-minute hat-trick to put Millwall in the playoff race along with Cardiff and Derby. Abby wrote that. No such problems for Leeds, though. They're back on top after five wins and five clean sheets in a row.
And Leeds are in motion for the first time with Harrison. Harrison attacks the left edge of the town box. Now he's crossed. Far post. Ayling arriving. Goal, Leeds United. A volley off the underside of the bar from Luke Ayling, who ghosted in unmarked. And Leeds have scored inside the opening few minutes.
Speaking of players with excellent locks, everybody's favourite long-haired Welsh midfielder currently plying his trade in the Potteries, Joe Allen, is out of the Euros after suffering a cruciate ligament injury. And one more for you, Jude Bellingham took a tour of Old Trafford this week and Sir Alex is trying to make that transfer happen, clearly ignoring the advice of Uncle Adrian not to go there. So there's a massive game at the KCOM on Saturday as fourth bottom Hull host the team immediately below them in Charlton. All the talk pre-match, though, has been of the latest ownership row slash crisis enveloping the Addicts. To explain everything that's going on much better than any of us could is Richard Corley from the South London Press speaking with producer Abby.
So, Richard, it's all quite confusing, really, what's going on here with Charlton. First up, can you confirm, do you know what the current status of Tanun Namir is with Charlton? Is he still director?
Yeah, as far as I'm aware, Tanun Namir is still a director of Charlton Athletic. Obviously, the confusion arose from the fact that there were some Instagram posts that he put up earlier in the week in which he kind of indicated he was out. I think by that, he meant that he was no longer going to invest in the football club all the time. Other individuals were still there. Obviously, Charlton then kind of almost validated that he was gone by the fact that a statement went out saying that he'd, you know, effectively resigned and they'd accepted his resignation. But of course, I think a bit later after that, Mr. Namir sort of issued another statement via social media, which is the way of the world, I think, the way these things get announced.
Yeah, welcome to 2020.
Yeah, absolutely. Saying that he was still absolutely a director, but that the funding from his side of things had been stopped until he got control of the club and he was effectively running it with people that he wanted it there. You know, there was going to be no more money coming from him. So as far as I'm aware, this is now going to get a little bit sort of complicated. It never, ever seems to be in any other way with Charlton, though. So that's the situation as I understand it.
Well, speaking of the investment, I understand it was about $50 million to buy the club from Du Châtelet, but we were trying to work out before, has that money actually been paid? So does Nyma really own the club?
Yeah, I don't think it's black and white on all of this. I think the thing that's for sure is that if there has been any money that's been paid, it's not been very much, if at all. If you look at the situation, Roland de Châtelet still owns the training ground. He still owns the freehold to the training ground, and he owns the freehold to the valley. So effectively, the assets in the company belong to Roland de Châtelet still. East Street Investments had said all along, or fairly early on, they made it clear, actually, we don't own the valley, we don't own the training ground, but we have a legal obligation, I'll sort of say that in speech marks, that has to be completed by June. Now, of course, what this does with the latest developments is it makes you question whether that money is going to be there, whether they are going to be able to complete the deal. And obviously, even with Tanu Namir, if you look at the EFL statement this week, it makes it clear that the sticking point, one of the sticking points in them approving the deal, was proof of funding until 2021. And because of that, the club had a restriction in terms of what they could do in the January transfer window. So when you look at those facts, I would suggest a fairly big element of doubt. Is the money going to be there to push this deal through and actually take Roland de Châtelet out of the equation? Because as it stands, he is still very much holding in control of the main assets, which of course is the valley and the training ground.
And of course, there's now a transfer embargo on the club as well.
Yeah.
Do we know whether Namir has passed the fit and proper test? It's not clear in that AFL statement, is it?
Well, I think by looking at the EFL statement, I think it suggests that they have all passed it. You know, at the end of the day, Tanu Namir is the majority. You know, he owns a 65% stake in the business that has bought Charlton Athletic. I don't think the EFL would have given any kind of green light to any of this if there were any complications over his involvement. So I actually think the opposite is true. I think that all of the people, the three members of the board, I think they've all passed the requirements. I think the sticking point has been the fact that there has been these restrictions placed on the club, because there doesn't seem to have been any kind of investment or money that's been shown that they can run to 2021. I don't think you can say it's anything other than a mess at the moment. And all, of course, ahead of what is a huge game and Charlton in what is a very, very serious position in the table as well.
Well, yeah, this brings me on to on the pitch matters. You're facing Hull at the weekend. Can you imagine this affecting the team on the pitch? Because, I mean, kind of Charlton going through all of this is not exactly new to them.
No, I mean, it's... I think you can look at it both ways. I think you can make the argument that people say that players sometimes will look for excuses and that, you know, managers don't want to give excuses to players for not performing. But I can remember going back when Crystal Palace went into administration, and in that situation, I think they were on a plane up to Newcastle, if I remember correctly. And while the plane was in the air, by the time they landed, the news had broken that the club had been placed into administration. In that scenario, it really did kind of give a real sort of, you know, it united the players, and they actually finished the season fine and there were no problems. And then obviously eventually, you know, CPFC 2010 bought the club. But I think what it shows is that it can work the other way. It can be to unite people. And I think the message from Lee Bowyer will probably be, you can either use this as an excuse or you can accept it and try and, you know, make a positive out of it and come together. Because the thing is, I think from their perspective now, people will be looking at this and thinking, wow, they were already one of the lowest spenders, if not the lowest spenders in the league on the existing budget they had. With all this other stuff, you'd expect them probably to drop out now. So they could actually finish the season in a really positive fashion if they can get across and achieve the sort of target of survival.
Richard Corley from the South London Press there. Okay, so one of the big concerns in situations like this, and we've seen it with other clubs in the EFL this season, is about the protection of payments to players. We don't want a situation like we've had at Macclesfield and Southend in recent weeks. You've got a theory as to how we could make this a bit safer?
I've got a little idea, yeah, in terms of protecting staff salaries at football clubs. Look, at the start of every season or whenever the sale of a club goes through, why can't the new owner or the club's owner put down a bond to the EFL that equates to roughly, you know, 3 months worth of salaries for the players, for the staff, just for safekeeping. Now, if you are wealthy enough to run a football club and to buy a football club, that should not be a problem. When you lease a car, you have to put down 3 months, 6 months ahead of time. I think to have this slush fund would obviously A, be a commitment from said ownership, and B, it would just safeguard the troubled times, like we are potentially facing now with the coronavirus, with games being called off and whatnot. And yeah, I just think that's a possibility. And then in emergencies, you've got that sitting there where everything can be covered.
All right, let's talk about the actual game that's going on. We mentioned how important it is. We'll stick with Charlton while we're with you, Clarke. What's your theory as to why they've struggled so much in recent weeks?
Well, they're not scoring goals. They've not scored in the last three. That's been a big problem. I mean, this isn't something new. Okay, if you take away the first six matches of the season, where Charlton started like a train, didn't they? They've averaged 0.8 points a game. Now, you average that over the course of a full campaign. It's 37 points. You're absolutely relegated. You're probably bottom of the Championship. So this is nothing new. Earlier on in the campaign, they were losing games narrowly. Suddenly, they look a little bit more ragged, I think, without the ball. Defensive areas have been an issue. System-wise, I think you could point the finger at Lee Bowie in terms of constantly changing. Obviously, fans are saying a 4-4-2 diamond has been used too much. I think he's chopped and changed it. But overall, in recent weeks, I'd just say the structure of the team, no matter which system they've had, has been a bit too open. They're just leaking shots. 23 shots Borough had at the Valley at the weekend. In the matches before, 20 from Huddersfield, 24 from Sheffield Wednesday. When things aren't going well and you're not scoring a lot of goals, the one thing you need is to be compact and to not give too many chances away to opposition teams. Charlton aren't doing that at the moment, and that is why they've slid down the table.
As for Hull, Sam, you're much more intelligent when it comes to football and most things than I am. So me looking at it goes, OK, you lost Grzycki and Bowen and that's torpedoed your season. Is there anything more significant that you've spotted with their recent form, results, style of play, or is it just that those two big hitters went?
That's a big part of it. That's the stat doing the rounds at the weekend. They haven't won without Bowen since April 2017. So,
ouch.
It's a huge reason. He add to that, Tom Eaves is now missing as well.
For the rest of the season.
The two centre-halves, Davies and Burke, who me and Adrian spoke about, I think at the back end of last season, maybe under Adkins, they're both missing as well. So it's got a very inexperienced look to it, the back four in particular, and the spine of the team. And if there's one club in the EFL at the moment that might have a change of manager, I would say it's them. I don't think it's right, probably, that they change right now, but I could conceivably see it happening. This game at the weekend is the defining moment of the season. If they don't get at least a point, I don't think they can remain in the division. The form is that bad. It's the longest winless run since 1995, 11 games without a win, and they're not in any of these games either. They've been smashed by Leeds, smashed by Stoke most recently. It's a very difficult time. I would suggest, and we talk about it a lot, being solid. Go to a back three, go to a 4-4-2, whatever it is. Maybe keep the two players up the pitch. I think McGuinness will play against his former club, maybe go a bit direct, but they need to be solid. So I would suggest the structure of the team is what McCann will be working on this week, trying to nick something.
So both teams need to work on their structure. Yeah, if the coaches have their say, this could be the most turgid, goalless draw you've ever seen.
And a fun week in training for the players as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Whilst we're talking relegation battlers, Wigan Athletic make the short trip to Huddersfield on Saturday. The Latics start the weekend 2 points above the dotted line after going unbeaten in six earlier. I caught up with striker Kiefer Moore. Kiefer, six games unbeaten now. What's been behind the recent upturn in form that you've enjoyed?
I wouldn't necessarily say anything, really. It was more the case of, you know, getting that one win under us and then the momentum from that, you know, carrying us on from there. And I think we've been playing well beforehand. It was just, you know, just not getting the luck of the draw and getting results. But ever since we, you know, finally got that win and things have started changing, and I think there's been a lot more belief around the place.
You made the move from Barnsley to Wigan in the summer, which based on your past career, is quite a kind of prosaic transfer that we'd see with other players. Your career path's been absolutely incredible. Non-league to the Championship and back again in the same season in one case. Do you feel like you're here to stay now in terms of being at the top of the EFL pyramid?
Yeah, definitely, yeah. I mean, I've had a very fruitful career, you can say. I've been up and down. But yeah, like I said, yeah, like I'm here to stay now. I feel like I've really cemented, you know, my kind of presence in a way. And yeah, I'm here to stay.
I haven't double checked this, but I'm fairly certain that you're the only player who's gone from Yeovil Town to Viking. You weren't in Norway for very long, but how has that kind of influenced your career, that experience of going abroad and particularly from your non-league background to go to a club on the continent? It must have been a really, really sort of life-changing experience in a way, even if it wasn't for that long.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed my time there. It was obviously cut short because I wasn't really getting the game time I wanted. But I did learn a lot out there. You know, it was a different style of football, a different culture, and I learned a lot from that experience.
And I guess kind of you've learned how to deal with highs and lows effectively, haven't you? Because as I mentioned, you know, you've bounced around from non-league to the Championship and back again. It must give you a good perspective on keeping things in check and, you know, not getting too high with the highs and too low with the lows.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think it's all about that, you know, just it's all a learning curve. I believe every failure is a step towards success, and I take every failure as a lesson, and I always try to take something from everything and slowly improve, like, year by year.
We've got to talk about your international career. That's definitely a high point. You made your debut for Wales earlier this season. Do you have to pinch yourself sometimes to believe that in the space of 3.5 years you've gone from National League with Torquay to international football under Ryan Giggs and playing alongside Gareth Bale?
Yeah, you know, At the time, I didn't really think about it too much because I was obviously just all caught up in the moment. But, you know, when you do look back and you think of the career progression, I do, you know, hold that in high esteem. Like, I am very proud of what I've been able to achieve. And this is only just the start for me. This is, you know, I'm about to get going now in a sense.
Yeah, so it could be a big summer for you, but also massive game coming up this weekend against Huddersfield. Not that far away from you geographically, nor in the table. It'd be huge if you could get 3 points in this game.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, we've got a massive game coming up. We know all what they're about, and they're a good footballing team. I believe, you know, the position they find themselves in, no one would have seen that at the start of the season. But football's a funny old game, and, you know, I believe, you know, we've definitely got enough to beat them, and 3 points would be massive for our season.
Finally, Keith, we always like to finish with an important question. So here it is. You used to be a lifeguard. How realistic was Baywatch?
Not very realistic.
So you're saying you didn't have loads of scantily clad colleagues all around you, and it wasn't as much about looking good as it was saving lives?
No, not at all.
Were you swimming pool or beach?
Swimming pool.
That's not the ideal shift, really, is it? I guess you want to be on the beach on a good day.
I was sat in the chair, just watching.
Yeah, trying not to get a verruca.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Well, you're enjoying life more these days, I guess. Listen, you're doing fabulously. We wish you all the best for the rest of the season, and for the summer as well. It could be a landmark year for you.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you for that.
Thank you for more. Wigan striker and all-round good guy there. Friday night football takes place on the banks of the Thames, where Fulham and Brentford renew local hostilities. Who out of these two, Sam, is better equipped for the Premier League if they were to go up? You got Fulham have obviously got parachute payments, but they wasted tens of millions of pounds on very average players last season, most of which are no longer there. Brentford have got this new stadium to look forward to. I'm kind of thinking maybe it's teed up a bit more for Brentford to make a smoother transition to the Premier League.
Yeah, you have the experience of the Fulham squad, the players that have played there before, the know-how. But I think you get a bit of that shock factor of Brentford going up that first season, the boost that they would get going into the new stadium. So I think Fulham are obviously closer maybe to putting pressure on the top two, but I think that's gone now, realistically, for everyone. I think West Brom and Leeds are the teams that are going to be promoted. But Brentford needed that win against Sheffield Wednesday. for a number of reasons, mainly to get some of the players back in form. De Silva's been miles away from the level he'd set for himself, and Bueno as well. Marcondes is now producing good performances. So if they're going to be successful in the playoffs, that could be a real pivotal game to turn their, you know, end of the season around. So it's going to be a very tight game. Brentford have lost so many narrow games away from home, 1-0. That would be my concern going into this one, that something similar would happen again. I don't think there's going to be a great deal between the two sides. I almost put it down to Mitrovic against maybe Janssen returning, and also which of the fullbacks are on it this weekend. If the Fulham two, probably Christie and Odoi, can handle Benrahma and Mbeumo, they've got a good chance in this game. But I think it's going to be one way either side.
You've not been that impressed with Fulham, Clarkie?
Well, I wouldn't say that they've been poor. I mean, they're on a good run. The tough run of fixtures they've had, two home wins, two away draws. So they're doing fine. I look at them and I think they can be better. So you look at the talent they've got. I don't think Cavallero has been playing very well. Knockhart as well is really flattering to deceive. Wouldn't surprise me, actually, if both players miss this game. You know, Cabano can come in and add a bit of power. Camara on the other side, I think, is almost nailed on to start, given that he's shown a bit of form of late. Yeah, I don't love the shape of the team, particularly Harry Arter in this deep holding role. I don't feel he's necessarily the best man for that job. It'd be fascinating to see what they do, especially at fullback. I don't know whether Joe Bryan's going to be fit or not for this one. I know he had a hamstring.
Saw him go off. Yeah, it looked quite bad.
If it's Odoi at left back, then I think what they'll do is they'll just sit the back four there and with Arter, and then the front five, let them have it. And what you see with Fulham is Kearney and Bobby Reid playing in this deeper role, playing behind effectively a front three. It's a 5-5 formation. And it's fascinating because I think both sets of fives can upset the other. It's going to be a really, really interesting game. Fulham at home have the best record of anyone in the Championship, which is amazing because they've had some really bad performances there, haven't they? Five defeats. Some of them have been ugly defeats. They've been lucky. They've been winning matches that they might have drawn. And that's made the big difference for Fulham over the course of this season. Yeah, there's really not much in this game. I would actually lean towards the Bees here. I think that they've got, you know, that I'm not sure about those fullbacks that Sam was referencing there, Odoi or Christie. Not sure about them up against Mbeumo and Benrahma.
All right, well, those two sides looking good to make it to the playoffs, but there are a lot of teams hunting down what will probably be the final playoff spot, including Cardiff and their old boss and Sam's new mate, Neil Warnock, said this on the EFL on Quest.
Well, I've said right from the start, I think they can get in playoffs, and people thought I were cuckoo land.
I think what he means is I was in cloud cuckoo land, but we'll give him the partial credit.
Don't have a go at my pal.
Cardiff, Millwall, or even Derby to get in the playoffs. What do you reckon, Sam? Any of those three going to make the traditional late bid?
Well, I'm going to stick with Bristol City. I did that in a little bit of a West Country accent, didn't I? Just because they've shown powers of recovery, have they? Would have a couple of better results after two really bad defeats. So I'm going to stick with them. Naki Wells probably been the main reason. But out of the teams you've just mentioned, I would have to agree with producer Abby, with Millwall. I think a good run in. Again, the form has been a little bit inconsistent of late, but in the main, under Gary Rowett, been much improved. And the victory over Forest again showed brilliant tactical awareness from him, I think. Completely confusing the opposition and probably the management in the ways that he set up Matt Smith leading the line, and that mobility of Bennett and Wallace taking real advantage of Cash and Lolly on that right-hand side. So showed himself to be a really good tactician once again. And I think when you consider the games that they've got remaining, I would take Millwall over there, too.
Well, I've totted them up. I've looked at all the fixtures.
He's done a Sam Parkin.
I've done a shit. Yeah, exactly. I did. I thought you might have done the same. Lot to like about Millwall, but I have them just missing out.
With who taking six?
I've Bristol City way down. I'm not predicting too much from them. I've got my tip, which was more of a hunch really a few weeks back, but I'm sticking with it. Swansea. I think the Millwall have got a great run in. Haven't got to play any of the top 10. But Swansea's looks pretty favourable as well. And the Swans have been really unlucky lately. They've been The results have notched match performances. They've been the equal, if not better, of teams above them in the table in terms of their performance levels. So I think they're close to going on a good winning run here. So I've got them picking up 18 points from the last 9 games, which just edges it ahead of Millwall by a point.
Okay, so basically you've manipulated the statistics to suit your original argument. It's,
of course.
That's good working. We'll find out come May or maybe June or maybe July. We have had a couple of tweets asking, when are the Derby and Sheffield Wednesday punishments coming and what will happen to both as a consequence? Honestly, we don't know the answer, but the Athletic are reporting that the EFL's new leadership is desperate to resolve the case well before the end of this season, so any punishment is applied in this campaign and not held over until 2020-21. The case hearing hasn't started yet as Wednesday keep delaying it, so that's likely to plough on. So the odds then, and he has passed the Alan Brazil fitness test. Joe, are you having a nice time?
I am. A great first day's racing. I'm looking forward to the rest of the week, although I don't know how much longer my liver will be able to hold out.
It's always a real treat, isn't it, Joe, going to Cheltenham? And it's an opportunity, isn't it, for you bookmakers to wine and dine and treat those closest to you. And on that subject, we didn't get the invite, did we, my friend? No one from the Totally Football League show has been invited by William Hill or yourself this week. I've got to be honest, I'm fuming.
Well, after my attempts to lure you all to the darts failed, I thought you might have much better things to do with yourself.
One strike and you're out, is it? All right, okay.
No, I have to admit, I'm in with the general population this year. There's only so many people that can enjoy the hospitality of William Hill, and I'm sadly not one of those.
It's, as we record, it's 12:03 in the afternoon. How many drinks have you had?
I've had none. I've had a cup of coffee.
Wow,
actually.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's get to why we're really here. Odds on football matches. And we'll start with something that's not a football match, actually. Abby's been pushing this Millwall to make the playoffs agenda throughout the show. What odds would you give her on that happening?
Well, I mean, they're certainly in with a chance. Their odds against to make it into the playoffs, obviously sitting just outside the top six at the moment. They're 9-4 to finish in the top six, which puts them behind Brentford at 1-12, Forest 2-7, Preston 6-4.
How about Cardiff?
Well, when I got this through, I knew that it would be you presenting the show this week because you, as Abby's pushing the Millwall agenda, Matt, you're pushing the Cardiff agenda, and Cardiff aren't far behind in the betting either. They're 5-1, which puts just Bristol City at 4-1 between them and Millwall in the betting.
The other thing we've been talking about is this big game between Hull and Charlton. What's the latest with the relegation odds for both of those two sides?
All right, well, obviously the bottom three sides are now, sadly, the three sides that came up last season, and Hull look like they may well just escape on merit of the other three being just quite poor at the moment. Hull are 2-1 for relegation, although that price has collapsed considerably since the January transfer window closed. But the bottom three are looking most likely to be the three that go down. Luton are 1-7, Barnsley 1-6, and Charlton 4-5.
Okay, that's the Championship chatted. Let's do something similar with regards to League One, but not before an advert, a sound effect, or a voiceover telling you what you're listening to.
Get great offers every day with William Hill. Join today and get £30 in free bets when you bet £10 using the promo code C30. Whether you like great prices, free bets, or in-play scoreboards, William Hill has you covered. William Hill is who you play with. Promo code C30, new online customers only. Minimum £10 stake, win only. Minimum odds 1-2. Free bets paid as free £10 bets, 30-day expiry. Free bet payment method, player and country restrictions apply.
League One headlines. Tuesday night saw some key games as Sunderland lost to Bristol Rovers. That's Bristol Rovers, who lost to Southend at the weekend. Pompey and Fleetwood played out a compelling Archbishop Desmond at Fratton Park, as did Burton and Bolton at the Pirelli. The other results saw Tranmere beat Blackpool to boost their survival hopes. That means at the top, there are only 3 points between second place Rotherham and Wickham in eighth, whilst Tranmere are now just 3 points from safety. Elsewhere, Southend have been charged with misconduct by the EFL for failing to pay their players on time. The Shrimpers also face another charge for fielding an ineligible player in their win over Lincoln last month. At least they won at the weekend, though. A quick look at Tuesday's action then. Bristol Rovers needed that, as did their manager Ben Garner. Just a second win in 19 games in all comps for the Gas against a Sunderland side who are wobbling again. No wins in four outside the playoffs. No players put up for interview after the game on Tuesday either. Riot Act being read, it seems like. Sam, are they falling apart again?
I wouldn't go that far, but when you see some of the Sunderland supporters talking about the worst performance in 50 years, you kind of have to sit up and take notice. I'd want to be kind of measured about it because we've slaughtered Phil Parkinson, then we've backed him.
Speak for yourself.
Then we've slaughtered him. You need to wait until, you know, the playoff positions are finalised, and if they haven't made it, then he should come in for some flack. But last night, really poor. But they've been crying out for some changes. Mm. They've got the squad now. He put Scoen in last night and Semenyo, and it sounded like they just bypassed Scoen, went really long into Lafferty. He was booked, dragged at halftime back to Charlie White, which hasn't been working. Semenyo didn't impact the game. They doubled up really well on him. So it sounded like an ever so limp performance, and it looks even worse when you're up against the Bristol Rovers team who had won once in 17 previous games. That's the, you know, just their second win under the new manager. So you can understand the disappointment, but it just feels at the moment with Sunderland that, you know, he can't do any right, Phil Parkinson, and that, you know, people are always going to want different players playing or a different system. Maybe it's going to take a little bit longer. He probably won't have the luxury. He'll probably lose his job if they don't make it this season. And last night, it looked to me that it was about Johnson Clark-Harris, who's not been in particularly good form, gets himself two goals and dominated the three centre-halves, really did. Well aided by two young lads, Cameron Hargreaves and Jaden Mitchell-Lawson. And maybe a turning point for Bristol Rovers, but to be honest, I don't really know what Bristol Rovers are quite yet.
So Sunderland drop out the playoff places, replaced Clarkey by Fleetwood. Joey will be pleased about that. Have they got the staying power? We've been tipping them on the QT for a couple of weeks.
I think they're dark horses, aren't they? They're sort of sneaking under the radar, Fleetwood.
Dark horses with a loud jockey.
Yeah, very loud jockey. But they've got a very good record against the division's big boys, which bodes well for potential playoff games. And by all accounts, they were the better side against Portsmouth at Fratton Park. Own goal from the impressive defender, Harry Souter. But he levelled that up with a goal himself at the right end of the pitch. And yet, I don't think Pompey had a good performance here. They were struggling to create. And Fleetwood, I think are in with a good chance. Ched Evans came in for Paddy Madden, which is a big call because Paddy Madden has scored so many goals. And Barry Mackay, it is good to see him shining again because it didn't really happen for him down at Swansea, did it? And I felt like he didn't really fit. He didn't have a place in that team. Other players that play in his position were outshining Barry Mackay, and I felt like he lost confidence. At Fleetwood, he's one of the big fish in a smaller pond. He scored and played well again by all accounts. So, I think right Fleetwood off at your peril.
How about Tranmere, Sam? Where's this come from? Three away wins on the spin. Are they giving themselves a real chance of staying up?
It's probably doing them a right favour being away from their pitch, isn't it?
Yeah. Nigel
Adderley, I have to credit with this. First three away wins on the spin since October 2012. So giving themselves a brilliant chance and got real favourable fixtures.
Yeah,
they've got Lincoln, Rochdale, Wimbledon, MK Dons, the next four. And it sounds like defensively, Clark and Ellis at the weekend at Accrington Stanley were brilliant defensively. They had Manny Mont back in alongside them last night as well. So they seem to be better defensively. Ferrier's, I think, a really good player on his day. He just doesn't do it consistently enough. But having him amongst the goals last night alongside James Vaughan, you look at the other teams that I've just mentioned in the relegation battle, you back Tranmere to score more goals and cause more problems going the other way.
A bit more power now, haven't they?
Definitely. So if I was Wimbledon, I will be a little bit afraid today. And I think the Tranmere lads, considering the run they're now on, rubbing their hands together.
Yeah, big momentum. I think they overpowered a Blackpool team that are obviously being coached by a new manager that's got quite a strong ideology, and looked to me as if they were overpowered a little bit at times in the game. I was looking at the Blackpool midfield. It's really talented and really technical and really young. I think you've got Virtue in there, who's a good player. Connor Ronan, who's a good player on loan from Wolves. Dewsbury Hall, who scored a worldie. He's on loan from Leicester. not much sort of experience or nous in that engine room. And yeah, that's something, that's an issue for them, I think, moving forward. I personally would consider bringing in Jay Spearing back into the starting 11 with two of those three, but we'll see what happens over the coming weeks. But yeah, Tranmere, they are chasing down the Dons big time.
All right, well, while we're talking about Wimbledon, let's have a look ahead to their game at the weekend. It'll be at the Keepmoat Stadium where they face Doncaster Rovers. They're looking to pick up some points in their bid to beat the drop. Not going to be easy against Moore's men, though. Donny still with playoff ambitions following wins against Wickham and MK. You've been looking at Wimbledon, Clarkey. That's who we've been talking about. So we'll start with them first. We're not looking great.
No, not looking great. I mean, only one defeat in six. So they're drawing games. Wimbledon are solid. I think they're set up, really, to be okay on the road. But the problem is that they're not really. I mean, they average two goals against per match away from home, which is, you know, it's asking a lot to pick up points if you're conceding to a game. They've had no clean sheets away from home either in the entire season, which is crazy when you consider the last three home games, they've drawn 0-0. So it's quite a strange dynamic. I just feel that they should play a bit more football. They're playing the percentage game. They're very solid. But when you've got the three at the back and two wing backs, I always think three at the back works best if you make the pitch feel big and play a bit of football. Get those wing backs flying high up the pitch, delivering crosses for fun. But it's more of a five for Wimbledon, and that puts them under a lot of pressure. I'm struggling to see any reason other than the fact that they've you know, been solid-ish of late, particularly the game against Gillingham, finding it hard to find reasons why Wimbledon will cause an upset at Doncaster.
Totally different end to the season for Doncaster, Sam. Darren Moore not keen on talk of a playoff push at the moment, but they've been in great form. What are they doing right at the moment?
I think they've got really good attacking players, good options there. This weekend, Okunobiri returns from suspension. He's got 2 in 5, I think, since he's been at the club. Devontae Cole's been playing well, but not scoring. Got Ennis as well on loan from Wolves, who've been playing wide. And then you've got the elder statesman, your Coppingers, Sadliers, Taylor, John Taylor, who came on to make the goal at the weekend. So I think it's going to be interesting to see which way Darren Moore goes. I think now that this is the nitty-gritty, the next two games, I think, if they can beat Wimbledon and get something at Portsmouth, there's an outside chance of a playoff push, an outside chance. So I think maybe experience will prevail in terms of his team selection, looking ahead to this couple of games. But I don't know about you, Adrian, I just can't see that top seven capitulating in the weeks ahead. I know Sunderland are having a bit of a difficult time, and Portsmouth's performance last night was indifferent, but the power and the squads that these teams have got, I don't see Doncaster making up that five points.
I think they're sure. I agree. I actually feel that Darren Moore should probably get some credit here because it's a new team, not entirely a new team, but they lost a lot of their better players last summer, and I think he's done okay to keep them in there. And I do like the style of football. They knock it around, quite an expansive 4-2-3-1. It'll be a clash of styles, this one. Personally, I think that Donny's superior movement and quality on the ball might be a bit too much for the Dons.
Well, one team who definitely are in the promotion race are Oxford. They host MK Dons at the weekend. Oxford flying after 5 wins on the spin. It's moved them to within touching distance of the automatic promotion places. So maybe cup runs aren't such a bad thing after all. Clarkey, Matty Taylor banging in the goals, 6 of them in his last 5 outings to be precise. Who else has caught the eye for them?
Well, lots of players have caught the eye. I think it'll be a great game first and foremost. MK Dons like to go out and play these days under their new manager. So I think it'll be a bit of a shootout. 5 straight wins for Oxford tells its own story. It's interesting to see if a few new names come into the fore. Daniel Agyei came on and made a real difference at Shrewsbury. He's got a cracking goal. I don't know if you saw it. Pinged it right into the top corner. Brannigan, who Sam's been waxing lyrical about for months now, he produced a fantastic crossfield pass assist for Marcus Brown. And I think Marcus Brown is probably the one I'd bring up in terms of he's made the difference since the two boys left for Brentford. He's really stepped in and made the difference. So yeah, they've got a nice blend, Oxford, I have to say. You've got Brown in there, You've got Branigan, the passer. And then you've also got Alex Rodriguez, who we've barely mentioned this season. He's a really tenacious player, quite feisty, wins the ball back for them. So they've got a nice blend, and they are really in the mix, I think, for, well, they should make the playoffs now. I don't think they're quite got enough for automatic. But look, if Rotherham continue to stumble, you never know.
As for Carl Robinson's old club MK Dons, no wins in three, but seemingly far enough away from trouble for relegation to be a genuine concern. Jonathan Harries has tweeted us at The Totally Show asking, what have you made of how Russell Martin has done at MK so far?
Well, it's a very different style that Adrian just touched on. And I don't know Russell Martin personally, but I do know Luke Williams, his assistant, who was the manager of Swindon and has got a very clear identity with how he wants things done. And I'm seeing this mirrored at MK Dons. They're playing out from the back. It's very, very heavy possession based, and it will take time. And at the moment, there's a little bit of a lack of intensity to it, but that will come with repetition and better players that I'm sure they'll get in at the club. So I think the fans seem to be on board with it, although defensively they can get themselves into trouble and give the ball away. But I saw that at Swindon in a much better side than this, and eventually they made it to a playoff final. So they just need a little bit of patience. He's been pretty set in the system. It's a diamond, or he plays 4-1-4-1. Two good attacking midfield players. Louis Thompson, who was at Swindon, went to Norwich. He's fit now, and he's been fit, I think, for the last 8-9 games, which is a plus for him because he's been really hindered by injuries. And David Kasumo, another young player, looks very bright travelling with the ball. So I like those two. And I agree with Adrian, it'll be a brilliant game because of the reasons I've just described in the MK Dons setup, and also Oxford. I'm a big fan of theirs. And Dean Thornton's the goalkeeping coach, ex-Swindon as well. And when I spoke, I think it was on Quest a few weeks ago, and said that Coventry and Oxford are the best two teams in the division, he said, mate, what about MK Dons? You need to watch us. So I think they're playing things the right way. And I would suggest next season will be a lot stronger.
Let's get back to Cheltenham, where Joe Crilly is with us. Joe, Coventry aside, there's a frog's hair between the top eight in League One. Who've William Hill got down as favourites behind the Sky Blues to be playing champ ball next season?
Well, Rotherham are odds on to get promoted. They're 4-5. And then it's so incredibly close in the promotion betting. Peterborough and Portsmouth are both 6-4 for promotion. Oxford just behind at 7-4. Sunderland 9-4. So it honestly really could be anyone. I mean, even the teams like Fleetwood at 7-2. It wouldn't be surprising given how well they've played, albeit they've tailed off a little bit. Wickham at 10-1. It really is going to be an exciting end to the season in League One, certainly at the top anyway.
And as for the games that we've spoken about coming up this weekend, what will you give me on a pair of home wins for Oxford and Doncaster?
Well, you won't be surprised to hear that both sides are odds on to get the victory at home. 1-2 for Doncaster, Oxford 3-4. And the double isn't going to make you rich, I'm afraid. If you're backing both teams to win, you've got about a 1.5-1 shot.
Good stuff, Joseph. Right then, we're approaching stoppage time, but you know we've got mad love for League Two, so we'll be paying it/them/they a visit forthwith.
This is the Totally Football League Show with Matt Davis-Adams.
League Two headlines. More Macclesfield misery as the Silkmen are charged with failing to pay their players on time. Mark Bonner's been appointed Cambridge manager on a permanent basis following a successful spell as caretaker boss. Fortunately, there's absolutely no precedent for things going south quicker than a hiccup when other clubs have done this. At the top, Crewe are now league leaders with Swindon and Plymouth taking the other automatic slots. And on Tuesday, Newport lost 2-0 to Carlisle. Chris's Beach Boys really feeling the good vibrations. For those not in the know, Carlisle trying to bring the feel-good factor to the club with a good vibrations campaign. I'm picking up good vibrations. She's giving me the excitations. There you go. At the weekend, Morecambe are going to take on Plymouth. We're going to have a look ahead to that because it's top v bottom in terms of end of the country and bottom v top in terms of table. Just the 660-mile round trip for the Plymouth supporters. Coaches taking them to Lancashire will leave at 5:30 in the a.m. on Saturday. Morecambe just a place and 2 points above the relegation zone after winning just three times in 2020. Clarkie, it's a difficult job, no doubt, as he prepares to face his old club. But is it just me that thought Derek Adams might have had a bit more of an impact at the Globe Arena?
I think you're being a bit harsh there, Matt, I've got to say. I think he's doing all right. We know about the limited resources. He brought in a number of players in January, and they're all in the team, and they're all doing okay. Slew, Diagaraga, Mufumbi, the keeper, Adam Phillips, who's been terrific on loan from Burnley, will miss this game, unfortunately. He's scored goals from midfield. So I think his recruitment was really smart, and they're playing a bit more football. So slightly better to watch. And at home, they're not easy to play against. The Globe Arena, it's not the most intimidating stadium in the world. They haven't lost there since Boxing Day. Not bad for a team that's at the bottom end of the table. I think right now, even though it's kind of top v kind of bottom, Morecambe are more of a mid-table team, in my mind, in terms of the form book. So, look, they've got a chance here, especially the distance might play a part. I mean, Plymouth, I'm sure they'll go up the day before, but it is a hell of a trek for them. And not the most exciting fixture in terms of it being a huge crowd or anything. It might be a little bit dead there compared to what they're used to. So they've got to tread carefully here, Plymouth. Morecambe are playing okay. Aaron Wildig, the central midfielder, scored three in his last five. So he's a player to look out for. But it's all about the start, really, with Morecambe. When they score first, they're okay, but they concede the first goal almost all the time. 70% of matches, Morecambe concede the first goal. That's the worst record of anyone in League Two, and they don't have a great comeback record either. So if Plymouth score first, lump on them.
So Globe Arena, not the most intimidating stadium in the world, but probably the only one named after the world. Sam, you've been boning up on Plymouth. They start the weekend.
Hang on,
that's right, I said boning.
What's boning up mean?
But you never heard boning up before.
No, I've heard it.
I like it.
Different sense.
Yeah, I'm sure you have. But boning up means to study. Abby, I'm not making this up, am I? Boning up is a thing. Yeah, it's a thing. You've been boning up on Plymouth, Sam, ahead
Certainly
of the
have.
Game. They start the weekend in the automatic promotion places. Do you think they're going to end the season there?
Well, I went for Exeter a few weeks ago, so I can't do an Adrian, can I, and just start changing my predictions. Well, this is a big game for Plymouth because with a Devon derby on the horizon and just 3 points separating the aforementioned teams, they need to get something here, and they've been a little bit stuttery. Is that a word?
No, boning is stuttery, isn't it?
They've been stuttering
yeah.
and boning in the last few weeks away from home. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to see how they go. I think we've spoken about Plymouth's maybe lack of an obvious goal scorer throughout the season. Jeffcott's obviously come back and done really well, but Ryan Hardy appears to be that man. He's got 7 in 13, and now he's scoring goals when he's picked from the start of games. He's had that super sub tag that we spoke of a few weeks ago, but scored in the last two. Let's not get carried away about them beating Grimsby and Macclesfield convincingly at home, so a better test this weekend. But the balance of the midfield in particular looks great, and just really pleased to see Danny Mayer, you know, really showcasing his talents in the last couple of games. We thought he'd be the best player every week in this division, considering how good he was for Bury under Ryan Lowe. Not really happened, but exceptional in that victory over Macclesfield, linking with George Cooper, who got two goals and an assist. So having got that balance right there, having the options in attack, I'm a little bit concerned about my prediction with the Grecians.
Mm. One last trip to Cheltenham then for us and Joe Crilly. Joe, League Two wise, what odds have you got around the top seven and who's going to finish in those places?
Well, again, like in League One, it could be one of a number of teams or a couple of a number of teams. Certainly the teams towards the top look nailed on, with Exeter, Cheltenham, both 1 to 100 to finish in the top seven. But then the race gets very interesting behind. Colchester 4 to 11, Northampton 4 to 6, Port Vale 6 to 5, Bradford potentially in with a shout at 4 to 1 as well. And if we're talking about which side's going to get promoted, that's when it looks a little bleaker for those teams that I've just mentioned, with Swindon, Crewe, Plymouth and Exeter all odds on to go up to League One next season.
Good stuff, Joe. Drink responsibly.
I always do. Thank you very much.
All right. Well, before we leave you, it's time for the never tedious what are the chaps up to this weekend section. Sam, where in the wide world of sport will you be?
I am going to Fulham Brentford, and then it's my birthday. So I'm going to enjoy the weekend with friends and family.
Lovely. Nothing more specific than that. Roast on Sunday, couple of beers Saturday.
Yeah, I've got a job Saturday evening. So, just probably go for breakfast and maybe spend some money on some clothes that I don't need on Saturday afternoon. And then Sunday, meeting up with my family and my partner's family.
Okay, just looking forward to it. Make sure you get some clothes that can cover a sick stain easily, because that's about to become a big part of your life. There'll be no more white t-shirts for you for the next year or so. Clarkie, where will you be?
I'm going to be at the Hawthorns, actually. 12:30 kickoff Saturday, West Brom against Birmingham. Huge game, isn't it? I'm with Sam. I still think West Brom have got enough of an advantage, but they definitely started to wobble. Birmingham capable of causing an upset, so it should be interesting.
No football for me this weekend. I'm off to my sister's wedding. It's sure to be the match of the day. Don't worry, Caroline's back next week. Join her and the boys then. But from all of us here, it's bye for now.
You've been listening to the Totally Football League Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, please email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. Keep up to date with everything across our Totally Football network at The Totally Show on Twitter, and make sure you check out our brand new website too, thetotallyfootballshow.com.
Slaven, host of the Totally Scottish Football Show. And if you like football, you're gonna love Scottish football. It's not all just Stevie G and Scott Brown up here. No, because we talk about all of the Scottish football, and geez, oh, it's great. There's actually a title race this year in the Premiership. Stevie G will be hoping not to slip up again. Hearts are tearing each other a new one. Motherwell are doing well, they're doing well. So, if you like your football to be competitive, have a title race and a ton of drama off and on the pitch, the Totally Scottish Football Show is most definitely for you. Grab Scottish football by the balls, just like Ryan Christie did, and listen to the Totally Scottish Football Show, available everywhere, even in England.
Muddy Knees Media.